sitting here with the Food and Farm Council of Riley County, and I have in studio with me Vicki James, the coordinator. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
We also have board member Adrian Self.
Good morning.
And we have intern Rachel Van Gilder.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming in. And I first heard about you guys at a Manhattan City Commission meeting back in May, and you know, hearing about it just sort of piqued my interest a little bit, and I thought I'd bring you in to talk a little bit more about what you do and how all of this got started and maybe some of your goals. And whoever wants to start and chime in first, tell me a little bit about sort of the beginnings of the council itself and how things have progressed over the 9 to 10 months that it's been in existence.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I think we're so new that a lot of people don't know about us, so this is a great chance to let people in Riley County and the city of Manhattan know more. The council is actually Riley County and the city of Manhattan, because we represent both the city and the county, so all our rural folks are included. This council is a dual appointment of the city and county commissions, which is really a very forward-thinking council on the part of the commissioners to do that. So we so appreciate that. The purpose of the council is really to advocate, be a transfer of information, and educate folks about having a healthy food system. We'd love to see it easy to have simple access to affordable, healthy food for all people. This probably started a couple of years ago with just some people that were really interested in healthy eating and physical activity, forming the Flint Hills Wellness Coalition. And from there, that morphed into 5 work groups. And one of the work groups was a nutrition leadership team. And that morphed into having some grant funding from the Kansas Health Foundation to put forward a very thorough 87-page document that was a food system assessment. So it was an assessment of what are the gaps, what are the needs, what's going well in our system. And when you think about a food system, I think it's hard for people to really wrap their head around that. It's really how we grow, what we buy, what we eat, and what we trash when it's related to food. So it's all of the activities. It's really a sum of all the activities that it takes to feed people.
From the start to beginning.
From the start all the way to what we put in the trash. Yep. And so that's why when you think about it, we really don't have a department of food. I mean, there isn't someone that coordinates all that. And that's why it's very advanced thinking across the country, and the state of Kansas is really on board with that, having local food and farm councils as a way to bring people together to make it easier to eat healthy.
And talk a little bit about some of I understand you've done 75 interviews with different groups so far, and you know that was back in May when you said that, so it may have been a bit more by this point. Tell me a little bit about what those discussions involve. What are you talking to them about, and who are you speaking with?
Our council felt it was really important to listen. We don't want to tell anyone what to do. We don't want to alter any of the great work that's already going on in this community. We just want to make it easier for people to collaborate. So we came up with 6 or 7 leading questions, very open-ended questions, where our council members and our nutrition leadership team are going out having face-to-face 1-hour interviews with those that are doing work in different sectors of the system. So it might be people that are very directly involved in the system, such as grocers, so retailers, restaurants, caterers. It may be people in the healthcare industry, so the hospital, the clinics. And then it may be folks that are maybe a little more behind the scenes, but equally important, such as our transit system, so at a bus, because access to food is really critical. So even those that you maybe not say direct line with food system, we're sitting down with them. We're doing there are 2 reasons for that, Nick. One of them is to educate and learn, both, 2 ways. So people know about us and we know about them. We also, our second goal then, is to develop relationships, because the primary function of this council in the next coming months is to take those that want to after the interviews and bring them together and form work groups, so that we will begin to really have boots on the ground in the community to make some changes to make a more healthy, robust food system. So we have 50 of the 75 interviews complete. Not a single person or organization or business or nonprofit or for-profit that we've talked to has said, nah, I want to just stay the way we are. every single entity has said, we need this coordination and communication. So we really want folks to see the council as a conduit to bring people together and to listen and learn and get everybody involved.
And when you see that type of buy-in maybe from these different groups, does that tell you that maybe there's it's fertile ground for something like this?
I would definitely think so. I represent, during my day job, the National Agricultural Biosecurity Center at K-State and work in a similar effort for integrating projects and coordinating projects, discovering good interfaces for people to engage, and if not discovering them, then developing them. And there's, to me, a great need in the Manhattan and Riley County areas for something like this.
And I know that sometimes there are some criticisms from some in various areas about this, but I remember during the meeting, one of the big reasons you talked about the need for this is that I believe the stat was 30,000 Riley Countyans live in food deserts. And talk a little bit about that and sort of what food deserts are for those who aren't familiar with the term.
Well, you're right. That's a term that can be a really hot potato, and it certainly created one here. So what I really want to emphasize with that is that it's not necessarily about just where you live. There are really two criteria that are used. And again, that's not a term I made up. It's a term that's been around for years and years and years. It's hard to define without a lengthy conversation. But it really has to do with households that live a certain distance from full-service grocers. So in urban area, that's 1 mile. In rural, it's 10. So that's factor one. Factor two, then, is a household income that's 200% of federal poverty level or lower. So if both of those criteria are met in a household, then that's someone that we would consider at risk for having food insecurity. If you have a certain percentage of people that live in a census tract that meet both those criteria, or even one of those, you begin to use the term food desert. So my house might be in one of those census tracts because of the distance that I live from a grocery store. But if my income level isn't that, then I would not be one of the folks that we'd really be targeting for concern, if that makes sense. That gets very confusing. So what we really need to begin to focus on is not the fact that the data is 30,000 people in 6 census tracts. It's that at about 17,000 of those people meet both those criteria. Now, I don't know about you, but I think if anyone meets those criteria, it's reason for concern, and we want to try to make it easier to have affordable, simple access to local healthy food. So from moving forward, we will talk a lot more about how do we make it easier for everyone to have food. We have one of our initiatives is going to be called Food for All. We want to have equality around everyone being able to afford in a reasonable manner having healthy foods.
And it might seem obvious for those of you who are involved in foodways day to day, but what are some of the negative impacts you see from those being in food deserts or being in the category of those 17,000 who fit under that category? I can imagine that there's negative health outcomes as a result of that.
Well, Rachel, I might let you speak to this a little bit. Rachel is one of our summer interns from Kansas State, and she actually serves as the student coordinator, is that correct, at the Cat's Cupboard on campus. So you might address that a little bit related to students, because that's really one of our targeted groups that we really want to support.
Yeah, so for like students accessing healthy affordable food, one of the larger populations on campus, I would say, would be international students. They have a ton of barriers coming over here to accessing those foods, and it's because of lack of transportation and knowledge. They just don't know what resources are available for them. For health impacts, not even students, but anyone that is suffering from food insecurity, they do tend to be more obese or fall into those negative health groups. So it does impact the health. But for campus, those international students, yeah, they are they're our target group, I think, with getting them more access and educational needs for their overall food intake.
And you're into this interview stage, but what are some of the further steps after this? Or is that something you're working out as you continue to conduct these interviews and see ways that collaboration can exist? Will you determine that at a later time?
I think the answer to that is yes and yes. How about that? We have been able to secure some grant funding. It's not large, and it's not going to take us for the next 20 years. But it's kind of some startup funding to be able to actually have some local healthy foods people can taste when we have gatherings and forums. It'll be for print materials. It'll be some time for some other students to help do some work with us. So we will have a little bit of that backgrounding dollars. And in that, we've really identified four priorities. And one of our priorities is food insecurity. We've already talked about that. Another one is food recovery. And those really go hand in hand. So if you have people not having enough healthy food, not having enough food at all, and hunger, but you have food waste, so you have food not being recovered, maybe from caterers, restaurants, institutional food settings. And so that leads to the third priority is wasted food. So we have food insecurity. We have food recovery. Food recovery would being able to take food safely that has not been served out, and transporting that, getting it timely then to food that people that need it. And then there's the wasted food, like we all have issues with beyond what's in a restaurant or a caterer's kitchen. How about that broccoli that's set in the back of the refrigerator and got fuzzy before you got to it? Or the food that you made for your family and they didn't like it. They don't like leftovers. So wasted food is food that's still edible that ends up, for whatever reason, in the trash. So reducing landfill waste while we recover more food for those in need, that makes three priorities. And our fourth priority that goes with that is food skills. If I have all of the food in the world, but I don't have a kitchen with the items needed to prepare that food, or I don't have the skills and the knowledge to know what to do with it, then all of that effort is lost. So those are our initiatives and priorities, and we want to use the little bit of funding we have to help move those forward. Our goal then is to invite all the lead partners that we've done interviews with to come together and spend a day with us in conversation in small groups. Who's already doing work in those fields? Who would like to jump on board and get involved? And so this needs to really trickle down into everyone has a role and a responsibility here to work together if they so choose. So I think just like everything else in this community, being around the Wildcats, we'll probably call ourselves the Cats, the Community Action Teams. And the Community Action Teams will focus on those priorities and really begin to identify what are some measurable goals, what's realistic, what do we have the resources that we can bring together and decrease duplication of services but increase collaboration and really try to be empower people to help themselves and work together to make a difference. So all the way from a policy level with our commissioners down to the individual household level.
And when you bring up the idea of food recovery, it just sparks in my mind these initiatives I've seen in other cities where they either restaurants or grocery stores would, you know, when they have extra stuff that's not being sold, or it's reaching that shelf life age when maybe it's not bad, but they just have to throw it away. They donate that to a certain group. Is that kind of something that you're leading towards?
Some of that is happening now. The Breadbasket has a relationship. Breadbasket being our community pantry does great work, and they have a relationship with many restaurants and other retail food outlets here in the community. Still, though, we don't have a coordinated system. There's not a 1-800 call whoever or whatever to have a really effective across the community broad-based food recovery system. Again, there's pockets of work that are very dynamic and effective, but it's still on a very limited scale. And the other thing that happens, Nick, is a lot of people don't know who's doing what. So again, it's back to exchange of information and coordination of services. So we just hope to build on what already exists out there so we can decrease waste in the landfill. Adrian, actually, and another one of our members of the council, Josh Brewer, are serving as part of the County Solid Waste Management Committee for the next, is it 3 years?
I believe so.
3 to 5 years. I'm not sure. You might be on for life. I don't know. But we love the idea that the county has embraced that and invited the council to participate in that. So one of our initiatives hopefully will be a consumer education push where we will work closely with Health Department, Extension, and other partners to really help from a restaurant level all the way down to a household level in how can we work together to reduce the amount of wasted food.
And I believe that sort of just sparks again in my mind something you said at that commission meeting. It's not an issue of food shortages. It's an issue of distribution, essentially. It's not that there's not enough food. It's that the collaboration perhaps isn't there to get it into the right hands when maybe it's going – would typically go in the trash.
I think that's really true, and it's very complex. If it was simple, we'd all be doing it all across the country. So this is not an isolated problem in Riley County and Manhattan, Kansas. It's happening everywhere. But it takes a lot of people, a lot of time, some dollars, and just the efforts to work together to figure it out. Food safety is a big issue when you talk about food recovery and distribution. So that's why Extension and those that work in food safety and why our university will be key in helping us with this. We don't want to just do something. We want to do it right, and we want to do it with policy and program and then educational practices at a home level all the way up to a systems level so that this is sustained long beyond the 15 people that are serving now on the council. We want the city and county commissioners, we want their job to be easier. It's a complex job that they have, and we are here to be their advisors and to help them really lead our community in a very healthy way.
And when you referred to food skills, I know that for myself as a student, I did not necessarily have the best food skills. And Rachel, maybe this is more of a question for you. What sort of the lay of the land that you've seen now at K-State? What's the spread of food skills there? Is there a large deficit in maybe understanding on how to properly prepare stuff and know what to do with the food once you even have it?
I would say yes, especially for students, especially freshmen. They come on in and they start in the dorms, and then maybe they'll make their way to living off campus. And I know in my undergrad career, it was a transition moving off campus, and it's like, oh wow, I have to cook for myself now. How do I do these simple things? So I think there is a lack of knowledge around food skills and food safety. Me personally, I have learned it, and I am in the field of public health, so I have been taught and learned all that in class, so it's something I'm very familiar with now. But for people that aren't in that field, there's probably a lack of education needed for students especially.
And as I understand, you also have a couple openings that you were hoping to talk about as well, and whoever wants to jump in on that, let me know. What are the openings that you have coming up?
Yeah, thank you. And I really want people to take this seriously because we need lots of people to be involved with this. So when the council was appointed, there were 6 appointments through the city commission and 9 through the county. And those were done so that some were a 1 year, some were a 2, and some were a 3, so we didn't lose all 15 people at the same time. So we now have some 1 year positions that some people have chose to be reappointed for a full 3-year term, and then we have 2 that have chose not to. One of those is an opening through the city. So if anyone's interested, they can go to the City of Manhattan website, and from the homepage they will see a place they can link to advisory boards and committees, and on there they can click on Food and Farm Council, and they'll see a very simple 1-page application. They fill out, click, and go, and it goes through. It pops through to someone at the city, and then it pops through to me, and then I will let someone know that we have received their application. Why is it important to even consider this? We want this to have a great representation across our city and our county. So it's in our bylaws that we have recommended sectors of the food system be involved. And one of those, one of the people that's leaving is someone that represents food retail, is involved in the chamber and involved in wasted food and recovery. So it's someone through a restaurant. So we would really like someone to refill that appointment. Now, if no one wants to or steps up to do that, then this will be an at-large position. So anyone can still apply, even if you don't meet that criteria. We keep all applications on file. As people feel they need to leave or they leave the community or their term is up, we'll be filling those. And beyond that, as I mentioned, all these initiatives with CAT teams will start in the fall. And boy, we're going to need lots and lots of people. So leadership positions, behind-the-scenes positions. So even if you don't feel like you can fill an actual appointed council position, we hope people will still consider applying or at least contact us. The other position that's open, I'm going to let Rachel share about that because it's a student position, and the application for that is through the county. And I know that's a little confusing, but because it's a dual appointment, we have to work the system so it works with city and county. Also, if you have questions, I do want to not forget to share. You can always go to the Flint Hills Wellness Coalition website. And at the top on the navigation buttons, there's a contact us that will pop you to a page where it gives you a phone number, it gives you names, emails, a little place to type in your question, and you can send info, and I will get that and can call anybody back. So, Rachel, tell them about the student position, if you will.
Yeah, so the student position is the county appointment, and you can find the appropriate link on the Flint Hill Wellness Coalition for the application. The only thing that's different about the city appointment is that it's not an electronically submitted application, so it has to be sent to the county clerk's office. And the deadline for both the applications are July 15th, but it's important for a Kansas State University student to be part of this council so we can have a representative for the student body and their ideas and their voice. And it would really help connect those gaps and barriers between different student groups, populations, again, going back to the international students, and then just what's being done on campus. We also have a food recovery network that does help with food recovery, and this position would just be really good for a student representative to share the voice of K-State and meet those needs.
And Adrian, just briefly, talk about sort of the importance of the diversity, having a diverse group on the board and sort of the makeup of the board as it is now.
Well, having those staggered appointments helps in a seasonality or a timeline. So as Vicki said, not everybody walks away from a term and we start almost from scratch again. But not only the staggered appointments from a time sense, but they're staggered from disciplines and expertise across the community. There's people that represent restaurants. There's people that represent farms. There's people that represent pieces of K-State. So it's a broad stroke of what community expertise is out there.
And we're just about out of time here, but is there anything else you wanted to touch on that you're hoping I would ask about that I just didn't? Or do we cover it all pretty well?
I think you ask great questions, and we appreciate the opportunity to let the community know that, number one, we exist. Number two, we really care about all the people in the county and in the city, and we want equality for food and for people to be able to have simple access to healthy, affordable food. We need everyone involved with this. This isn't about a handful of people. We're not the food police, certainly not trying to tell people what to eat and how to do it, but make it simpler. July 15th is that deadline for applications for the city appointment and for the county appointment for the student position. We hope we have so many applications that we start to have a big stack. That'll make it easier to do our work when we get going with initiatives in the fall. How much time does it take? The council meets once a month for about an hour and a half. And beyond that, we do have a small group. We're going to be getting started with these CAT groups, so people may have a second meeting a month. And it depends on how involved you want to get. But there's something for everyone to do. And if nothing else, just contact us with your cares and concerns, because we do want to listen. We want to be a forum. So we hope this is a council that's here forever in Riley County in Manhattan. And our next step also is to develop media partners we want to continue to share. So we hope you'll have us back and we get to tell you what we're doing in a few months from now.
Definitely. Well, Vicki, Rachel, Adrian, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.